call to order the April 6th Des Moines Water Works Planning Committee meeting. And we'll have folks introduce themselves as they speak. The first item on the agenda is the TCE South Plume. And I'm going to toss this over to Ted or Mike to talk more about this.
Thank you, Andrea. I think that I will give a quick intro and let Mike take it from there. He's actually going to handle both of our agenda items today, the TCE South Plume and the park events item. But we wanted to share with the board today an update on what we call the TCE South Plume, the DICO site that is across the river to our north and east, has been, had TCE contamination for many years, several decades, in fact, fairly significant contamination there. You may have heard about this. This is a completely separate site, somewhat less contaminated, but also beginning to be a point of interest for us. And so we wanted to bring some awareness to the board, let you know what's going on over there and what we expect to happen moving forward. Mike's going to walk us through that. And then after questions and answers there, he's going to move right into a discussion of 2021 park events, and specifically related to the Park Foundation and some COVID protocols that they are working on and working out with not only us, but also with the city of Des Moines, so that they can be prepared to have various types of events here in the park safely this summer. So with that as a quick intro, I will hand it over to Mr. McKernan, and he will start with the TCE South Plume.
Very good, Ted, thank you. Again, yeah, today's topic here is TCE South Plume. And we'll give you a little history here and hopefully be fairly brief here, but we've talked about the gallery a lot here in the last probably 3 or 4 months. And this TCE South Plume is really kind of the third chapter of that. Our discussions initially started with, you know, issues relative to the DICO site. And, you know, again, that's a 30 plus year old endeavor and issue for the utility and the neighboring area. Most recently, there's been some discussions about, you know, finally doing some development over there. So that's kind of up here in the northeast corner. Clear southwest is, you know, the PFAS issue and some of the firefighting foams that likely used at the guard base that are potentially finding their way again into the western reaches of the gallery. Today's topic, this TCE South Plume, and can you see my mouse or not?
I can see it, Mike.
Okay. You know, this TCE South Plume is over here. I'll just call it South, but it's in the lower right-hand part of this image. And it's creating some influence here that we want to talk about today. But before we dive in there, I just want to refresh everyone's memory on how this gallery flows. You know, we're at the very western edges here. Water's being collected and it's flowing from west to east through the park. There's a point of, you know, where some things join here. So this western section feeds all the way in, gets to this intercept shaft, I'll call it. There's also some parts of the gallery from the north that wrap around the plant, come down to the same collection point. And then all that water gets collected and it goes into the plant where it enters the treatment process, where it gets, you know, softened and pH adjusted and filtered and so on before, again, being pumped to the public. The red dot up here is where we had to go in, again, mid late 80s and isolate, put in some packers to prevent the DICO site from having adverse effect on the water quality here. So again, the traffic again from the north around and from the west moving east again combines and goes into the plant. Investigative efforts on this South Plume actually started back in 2004. There was a report of a known release of solvent. Again, the general area being between south of George Flag, north of Bell, and kind of bracketed by this orange box here. Initial investigations and initial wells led DNR to install even more monitoring wells and do more borings and do more investigations. So they felt like they had started investigation with maybe an initial target. And then as they've learned more through their investigating, you know, they've got a new, I call it a hypothesis now, or some confidence where they know where the strongest source of this pollutant is coming from. But again, it all started in 2004. By 2009, they approached us and asked if some monitoring wells could be installed on our property. And there's four monitoring wells in the park, and they're roughly installed inside this red circle, as shown. Again, they're hard to see out there unless you're looking for them, but envision a 3-inch diameter pipe maybe sticking up out of the ground, a couple, 2 feet maybe, with an access point on the top. Those are just a sample of what is on our property. Again, DNR's investigative efforts drew them toward ultimately a property at 2201 Bell Avenue as the source of the pollutant entering the environment. And that property is owned by a Mid-American Development Group. And without accepting any responsibility, there were a number of ongoing conversations between property owner and DNR about developing a remediation plan and potentially executing that remediation plan. And that optimism that surrounded those initial conversations came to an end in 2019. They reached impasse, and there was not a path forward for the state to handle that. So in early 2020, DNR submitted an official request for federal action. This is a step they take to get EPA involved, US EPA. So I want to give you a sense of some of the work that DNR has done here to investigate this issue. Again, I'm not asking you to zoom in on this and read the text associated with each of these spots, but at every one of these points on this map, there's been some effort by DNR to collect a soil sample, install a monitoring well, or maybe some sort of combination of both. And again, as they have pursued this effort, they think the strongest source of pollutant occurs again in this corner of this property here, former stone container for many of us. I remember seeing that business in play down there. So that gives you a sense of the width and breadth of the DNR's efforts over a decade. EPA made their first visit here in January.
Can you stop a second?
Yes.
So I still don't understand what the source of the pollutant was. It's not the owner's Mid-American Development. Before that was Stone Container, but what did they do there that generated this pollutant?
Great question, Diane. All I can say right now, without a little more research or asking DNR, is some solvent was used on the property, on the premise, and there was a release from that process. So this TCE is a very common element of degreasers and cleaners, kind of industrial type cleaners. So Ted, do you know if you have any recollection of hearing specifically what may have been in use?
I don't know specifically on this site, Mike. I know that at the Dyco site, the presumption is that they were using the used degreaser that was contaminated with grease as a dust control in their parking lot. That's on the other site to the north. This site, I haven't personally heard whether it's something like that, where they were literally dumping the material, or if it was a situation where the product was leaking as it was being used, or whether they were degreasing equipment outside or what, but it's some sort of degreasing operation that resulted in contaminants getting into the ground.
Okay, thanks. Just wondered.
The most recent visit, or I guess the initial visit by EPA, happened in January. And there's some key information about that visit that I want to make sure it comes across. When we typically sample our gallery, we're sampling the gallery. We're sampling the composite of the gallery. We're sampling all the water that's collected, and we're looking for any analysis that we do is typically done on the entire composite of the gallery water. When EPA showed up in January, working off a hypothesis that the DNR had kind of laid out, that potentially the south plume is something that could migrate toward Des Moines Waterworks, and it would intercept the gallery, you know, between the far west end and this point where it gets combined with that northern leg. And so when the EPA was here in January, they took samples again in western sections of the gallery and in northern sections of the gallery and in a composite section of the gallery. And what they found was something that helped support the hypothesis that DNR had, that if there was a plume over here that was moving toward the gallery, it would not be present in the western sections, or at least the far west sections. It might show up at some intermediate point on this leg, and that's what they saw. They saw nothing in the far western reaches. They received a detect here at a valve chamber number 4. On this northern leg, there was no detect of the pollutant. And then in the composite, there was also a detect. So that data helps kind of support this hypothesis that there could be an influence from this plume. They have another visit scheduled for later this month. They will primarily be doing a lot of work off of our property. They will be on other properties doing some soil analysis, looking again to pin down maybe the source of the pollutant. Again, repeating some of the efforts of DNR, but again, a part of their process that they need to go through. To give you a sense of the order of magnitude here, this is certainly an issue that has our interest and we will continue to monitor. But the event at DICO, you know, there's samples over there that had, you know, 8,400 parts per billion of the pollutant. The magnitude down south is far less. That doesn't mean we're not interested and we don't care. I just wanted to make sure the board was aware that, you know, this is like 1/24th or 1/25th of the DICO thing. Not that we want to repeat any of that. The detects in our water are not persistent per se. They will show up at times and then they will kind of fade away. When they do show up, again, we are seeing low concentrations of this 1/50th to 1/70th of the EPA's MCL. So again, this is an issue we just simply need to continue to be aware of, cooperate with EPA, and stay informed of how any of these concentrations may or may not be changing in our source water.
Mike, is that 8,400 number at the DICO site, is that a recent sample, or is that what it was at its peak years ago?
That's at its peak, Joel. Back, that comes out of a report. The report was written in 86, but it talks about a kind of a maximum concentration of pollutant that they found on the site back during the original investigations on the DICO site. That has now been far reduced with all of the remediation that's taken place on the DICO site.
Kind of spinning off, sorry, Joel, did you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Mike.
Spinning off of Joel's question, what was the, the timeline, but the progression of the DICO site? Did we see low levels that continued to grow that brought us to that 8,400? That we might see replicated that progression here at this other site, or was it kind of all at once made known to us at that level?
Our first detection of this was in our own waters, you know, going back to DICO. So we had some sort of detect in our raw water or our finished. I'm not sure which it would have been back then, Andrea, but that sparked a effort by EPA to do, you know, get on the ground and do a remedial investigation and do these, all these other investigative efforts to size up the magnitude of the problem. So that work in the mid 80s by the EPA to interrogate the DICO site, this is just one data point out of that, that again, after DICO operations had suspended, they found a groundwater sample over there with the maximum concentration they ever found was 8,400 parts per billion. And so thus far at the south site, the largest concentration that the DNR has found has been 350. And so I provided these two numbers just to kind of give you a little bit of comparison that whatever was released on the DICO property was far more significant from a magnitude perspective than what DNR has found to the south. That doesn't mean we turn the lights off on this and walk away. If there's any benefit to the DICO pollution, it was easier to isolate and it impacted only a small part of the gallery. If you look at how this south plume could come in and disrupt the gallery, that it didn't, you know, it's hitting it in the middle. If we had to get to a point where we need to isolate the gallery to prevent this from getting in, we would have to isolate a significant portion of the gallery, which would have a far broader impact on us in regard to our operations.
And Mike, you said that there were packers installed.
Yeah, just to call
what,
consider
what
that,
is
a,
that.
That's just a big plug, Diane. We went into the piping system and installed a plug so that the water could not flow in this very northern part and get and still flow to the plant. Water still collects here, but it's got nowhere to go. So, you know, we basically had to isolate several hundred feet of the gallery to prevent that pollutant from getting into our system.
And that stays isolated today?
It is isolated as of today. And there may be a point in our future, I say may, because I think the chances are low that we would open that back up, but it's conceivable if we felt we could do that safely and had the right amount of data to allow that decision to be made. Okay, any other follow-up?
So, Mike, go ahead, Andrea.
Sorry, so just, I wanna make sure I didn't miss anything. We're obviously not turning the lights out on this, but EPA is still going to be working on a remediation plan, even though these numbers are low, those conversations are going to continue to fix it all together.
Correct. I would say the probability here is very high that there will be official action that comes from EPA's investigative efforts. It's not 100%, but I think their early efforts to detect, albeit at a small level, there's a detection of this in our gallery on their very first visit. That is likely going to increase the chances significantly that a responsible party will be found and some remedial action will be required. This will not happen in weeks or months, but I think the probability is extremely high that there will be official action that comes in this.
What is the probability or possibility that this will preclude us from using a significant portion of the gallery?
Right now, I think we would have the opinion that that probability is low, Joel. We've got a lower magnitude. We're separated by distance, but we are certainly going to support anything that would impede its travel or call for its removal or anything that would, you know, remove, delay, block. Those are all things that we would be open-minded to in regard to, you know, this concern.
Just to make sure I didn't miss it, I know you talked about this, but I recall seeing the well sites where DNR is tested. Has it been found in our gallery yet?
Or in our— Yes, we have seen this, Joel, at the MCL is like 70 parts per billion, and we've seen it like one and a half, two. Those are the kind of numbers we're seeing in our gallery, and that gets blended down into our finished water. So the amounts in our finished water are one, less than one. And they're not always there. You know, it's, this is a situation where there are conditions, hydrogeologic conditions that allow it to migrate, and other times where it's probably being it's diluted more or being kind of hydraulically held back or blocked a little bit. So it can get there. It's evident that it can get there. And again, this sampling that EPA did where there was nothing in the far western region and then it shows up at the intermediate spot, that's a— it may not be 100% conclusive, but it's certainly strong evidence that something has entered the middle of the playing field here. And when you couple that with the work DNR has done to investigate and, you know, I think their own, I'm going to use the word strong word, conclusions that it's coming from here. Now, the property owner may have a disagreement with that conclusion, but that's certainly where DNR is at.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, I know that's lots of acronyms and numbers. You want to move on to a different topic. Like park events. Are we ready for that, Ted?
I am, Michael, as long as the board's questions have been answered.
Okay. In light of the last 15 or maybe it's 13 or 14 months of our lives in regard to the pandemic, we want to talk a little bit today about 2021 park events and some concepts. And we will focus a lot on the Park Foundation, but there's a part of this narrative that's also really about, you know, our own events that we schedule in the park. Jessica and Michelle Cole are often dealing with people that want to use the park. And the Park Foundation, of course, is trying to, you know, make the most of this investment in a very difficult time. So I'd like to talk about that again, hopefully very briefly here today. There were some proclamations last year that we were mindful of and we reacted to. But presently there's a proclamation that, you know, outdoor gatherings of more than 30 people need to have a COVID safety plan in regard to those events being conducted. And so for some of the events that we are scheduling, you know, again, by our own staff in the park, we are asking people that are gonna have a party of larger than 30, they need to have they need to submit a COVID safety plan that we can quickly review and basically allow them to have their event in the park. And so there's been some great success with that. People are more than willing to craft these plans and submit them. When we migrate toward events that would be pulled off by the Park Foundation, things that focus on the phase one park improvements, this quickly grows into events that involve far more than 30 people, you know, hundreds of people, maybe thousands of people. And so there have been discussions between staff and Park Foundation personnel. There's been discussions between Park Foundation personnel and City of Des Moines Parks and Recreation folks about how do we move forward? What's the right way to move forward? And so we want the board to know that Waterworks staff, Park Foundation personnel, clearly want to move forward. We want to move forward with the board having confidence that we would hold events on our own property in a manner that parallels how similar events on city property would be conducted. We don't want to be viewed as kind of a rogue event. We want to be conducting our events in a way that, again, are coordinated or aligned. And so with that in mind, the Park Foundation was asked to come up with some concepts and guidelines, and they came up with really kind of four different kind of categories of events that they would typically schedule or arrange. And so they've came up with some guidelines for races, runs, and walks, smaller performances, dances, and dinners, also recitals and smaller performances. And then, you know, some things involving larger shows involving the Killinger Family Stage and the Lords and Amphitheater. So is there a way to move forward in a way that allows us to have events but have them managed properly? The details of each of these were included in your memo. There's a lot there to read. I think I can hopefully give you some assurance here that, and I'm going to start with the larger events first. You know, an event on that great lawn creates a great opportunity for a performer or a promoter who's willing to take the extra steps to do it the right way. But a key element of these larger events is to kind of integrate what I'll call pod seating with aisles that physically distribute, you know, the crowd across a greater area. You know, a normal concert in the park, you've got 80% of the patrons probably occupying 20% of the space. This would be completely different. This idea of a mosh pit or some high density VIP seating is simply prohibited until public health guidelines are, you know, significantly relaxed. So again, there's an opportunity here to, if you're willing to plan and program the right way, to have a safe event in our view and in the Park Foundation's view. But if you look through the concepts that have been developed, you know, there's a number of things that are covered, you know, face coverings, when and when not required, signage, hygiene, restrooms, how to even walk to restrooms, being masked, entering and exiting the venue, food and beverage practices are all things that are kind of part of these concepts and guidelines. There are ways to do this that reduce risk. And again, what they've created here is some things to help govern that. These concepts and guidelines would, again, probably move up and down as we move forward through the next 3 months. We hope we're going to move toward something that approaches normal or closer to normal. But if there's a detour here and things need to get more restrictive, then these guidelines would move with those times, again, up or down. And we certainly hope it will move toward the more relaxed situation. So I think the message here is we want to stay in line with the city. There's an interest on the part of the city to be in line with the foundation as well. And so the intention here is to, you know, progress toward normal and have events in the park that are, you know, simply well-managed and safe. That's the intention here. It will look distinctly different. It will need to be managed distinctly different than the original shows that were held. So this is a path that we intend to march down, and we're looking for, you know, feedback, any concerns or thoughts on the matter.
I have a question here. So this pod seating, have they done this or are they going to do this? It looks like it would be expensive. Do you rent those or?
You know, this image here, and thanks for asking, because it won't look exactly like this, Diane. I think what they envision is it wouldn't be elevated. Okay. It would be something that there'd be a grid across the Great Lawn, and once you're inside your box, and again, the dimensions here are probably debatable, but you might have between 4 to 8 people in a given pod. Mm-hmm. While you're in your pod, you're probably going to be allowed to unmask. But once you need to exit your pod and go get food or use the restroom, you're going to need to mask up and travel in that way. This does look very expensive. In our discussions with Foundation, there would likely not be this hardened pod. It'd be more of a segmented grid on the lawn.
Mike, I think they're planning to paint the squares on the grass, right?
And yeah.
There will be no railings. There'll be no platforms. It's a square, a numbered square that you would buy, and you go to your square along the paths. But no railings is what they're envisioning.
I have seen that spray-painted pod in practice in Ankeny. Ankeny was using that at their amphitheater last summer.
Andrew, do you remember if this is a key question? Were there aisles on all 4 sides of the pod? Because that's something that we're kind of aiming for with the foundation presently.
I took a picture. Okay. I'll look. I'll see if I can find the picture. Because that's I don't remember, but I'll get back to you.
We did a few drive-in events last summer in the back of the park. They set up a stage, and people were expected to stay in their car, or most of them actually were in trucks. And you had a parking space, and then you had a few feet on one side of your parking space where you could stay. And they kind of roped that out. You know, they had a rope for each aisle. Similar, but no structure like this.
Do you know what the city is? I've seen a date. I think it's May 4th for opening Riverview, with a concert and fireworks. And have you talked to them about what they plan to do there?
I know that the Park Foundation has had one meeting with city personnel last week, and they have another meeting tomorrow. And in discussions this morning with Park Foundation, I know there's some sentiment that there may be a new proclamation coming out here in advance of that event, Diane. So again, we would try and be in line with the level of care that the city is going to try and exercise here.
Okay.
Just out of curiosity, I don't know how I feel about it, but you know, there's a lot of wear a mask here, don't have to wear it there, but wear it, put it back on here. Is there really any enforcement going on during all that? Are we requiring any sort of enforcement managers?
I think the there's probably gonna be some level of difficulty with that, Andrea, but at the same time, the folks that are having these events, they need to have a COVID manager that's going to help with that. The expectation here is that they will self-enforce. It's not our intention to be there and attempt to do enforcement. It wouldn't surprise me if we felt there was an event that was not properly enforced. That's going to be problematic and going to need to be dealt with as we consider other events, particularly from anyone who wants to do a, you know, rent again or perform again. So that's the best I can do on that right now, Andrea.
That's fine. I also found the photos I took last year in Ankeny, and it looks like there are no aisles. So I probably don't recommend that.
Our discussion has been aisles, and I think the Park Foundation is open to that.
Yeah, I imagine this was their first attempt to keep up with their summer concert series or whatever that it is that they do, and they probably learned fast that they needed aisles.
We're certainly encouraging the aisles, as Ted said. That last fall, there was a potential event that was had interest in being here. And one of the pieces of feedback we had, they had a grid, but they didn't have, in our view, they didn't have a sufficient number of aisles. So that's something we've really kind of held on to here to make sure that's part of the plan.
Sounds like the park staff and maybe waterworks staff as well have this covered, but to the extent board members can be of help reaching out to elected officials to make sure we're on the same page, or to ensure that the regulations here, common sense, please let us know.
Very good.
Appreciate that.
I'll be curious to see how we scale these back over time as more people get vaccinated and, you know, or the need for precaution reduces. I think it's just going to be really difficult for in all facets to kind of incrementally scale things back. No easy task. So I'll be curious to hear how that goes. And if you have any insights on, you know, if there are tiers to this that, you know, over time it's going to be scaled back, I'm curious, but I imagine that's something for down the road.
We're hoping that the CDC is going to help us out with that, Joel. We've already started having questions from employees about, you know, if we're both vaccinated, can we ride in the truck together without wearing masks now? And, you know, just as you would expect, we're maintaining our same mask protocols in the office and in our workspaces, but people are going to be anxious to get back to normal as soon as we can. So hopefully we'll get some guidance.
Well, along those lines, I appreciate staff taking the time to work with the foundation and putting this plan together. I know the foundation and many of our partners are anxious also to get back to normal, to have these events, to provide these community resources and attractions, and also to create that revenue to further the overall goals of the Park Foundation. So I appreciate you all taking the time to come up with these.
Thank you.
Do we have any other questions or comment from board members regarding the Park Foundation COVID guidelines? If not, finding my agenda here, I believe I'd turn it to Ted if you have any comments.
Yeah, Andrea, a couple quick things. As a follow-up to Mike's conversation on park events, just let the board know that the Ironman organization has indicated that they do plan to try to hold their triathlon in Des Moines on June 20th. That includes a swim at Gray's Lake, and then a run and a bike. And I know they're moving through the tunnel between Gray's Lake and Waterworks Park at some point. That's the plan. And they're going to do one of their transitions at the amphitheater. And so a pretty big footprint here in Waterworks Park. It's a race. You know, there isn't going to be a party in Waterworks Park or any of that kind of thing. But they're going to have to work with the city to get permitted and move that forward. So we're keeping an eye on that. That's June 20th, or that's the schedule. Also, just remind the board that next Tuesday's Finance and Audit Committee meeting on the 13th, we'll be reviewing our five-year CIP. If you're interested in hearing about that. Also next week on Thursday, the 15th, is when we'll be sharing our long-range plan update with our suburban wholesale partners. That's at 2 o'clock on the 15th. The same presentation that many of you have already seen, but just FYI, that's when we're gonna share that. Also, I'm hopeful to send an email out to all the members of the board this week related to strategic planning. We're starting to identify our community advisory group. And two things there. I'll be asking the board if they have any suggestions. I'll be sending you likely a list of categories of folks we're trying to identify. see if you have any recommendations on who we might want to consider or reach out to. And then, of course, we would like to have one board member be a member of that group. And so I'm right now waiting for the facilitator to give us the dates for the community advisory committee meetings and kind of the length of time and the level of commitment, so I can share that with you and any potential members of that group so they can determine whether they have availability to help us out with that. But hopefully by the end of this week, I'll have that information and be able to pass that along to you. And the only other thing I would share today is that we are moving in the direction of in-person board meetings for the month of July. And so that would include committee meetings early in the month, as well as the regular board meeting at the end. We'll continue to work on that and continue to talk about it and make sure that continues to be appropriate. But we're thinking that we will have in-person meetings with a Zoom link, very much like this, and the opportunity for board members or members of the public to participate via Zoom, but also opportunity for board and public to appear in person in the board meeting or in the board room starting in July. That's it, Andrea.
Well, that's exciting to kind of think about a light here at the end of the tunnel of us all being able to get back together.
Agreed.
Thank you for those comments, and I will open it up if there are any members of the public who would like to talk at this point. I don't know if I recognize any name, or I don't know if I don't recognize any names, I should say.
It appears we are all staff and board at this point. Yes.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining us today, and get out and enjoy this beautiful weather. And we'll be circling back to talk to everybody again next week.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Bye. Good night.
Bye.